People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. While the world's eyes are focused on the war in Afghanistan, the battle for economic justice in the United States continues. Our guest on this edition of PTR is Noel Beasley, Vice President for the Midwest Region of the Union of Needle Trades Industrial and Textile Employees, Unite.
I think you can only understand September 11th if you look at what was happening on September 10th, and this is the way we've been talking about it with our members. And you can just tick off the factors that were in play. Our economy was in tatters based on the dot-com bubble bursting, the NAFTA policies that have hit our union and our sister unions in the Americas very, very hard, the tightening of credit on individual consumers, the companies and corporations in disarray. These are things that were happening on September the 10th that were drastically affecting the livelihoods of our members, and they weren't as a result of any external terroristic force. These were all based on internal political problems and disarray in the financial community.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also published the newspaper, People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. The Bush administration is fighting a worldwide war on terrorism. Currently, that war is centered in Afghanistan. At the same time, the economy here in the United States is rattling on its foundations. There's a battle being fought here as well, a battle that started well before September 11th. That's the battle for economic justice. One of the organizations on the front line of this battle is the Union of Needle Trades Industrial and Textile Employees, also known as UNITE. Our guest on this edition of People's Tribune Radio is Noel Beasley, Vice President for the Midwest Region of the Union of Needle Trades Industrial and Textile Employees, UNITE.
UNITE is a product of a merger of two unions with long progressive histories in the trade union movement of the United States. It was created in 1995 of a merger of the International Lady Garment Workers Union and the Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers Union. And since that time has really staked out a major role in combating global exploitation of garment workers specifically and all workers in general.
Many people say that the world has been irrevocably changed since September 11th. What role will unions play in this changed new world?
We're trying to analyze what's changed and what's not changed and trying to understand how to restructure our activity. We have been very, very militant in the last 4 or 5 years with lots of rallies, lots of demonstrations. We've occupied banks, we've occupied retail stores in our attempts to bring to the forefront this question of global exploitation of workers. And obviously going forward from September 11th, we have to look at ways to continue to act, otherwise we'll be forced to only react. At the same time, we can't kid ourselves. We can't operate in the same style as we did before, but the content has to be very much the same.
One of the concerns being voiced is that the Bush administration may use the current crisis as an excuse for cracking down on other groups and organizations that it finds objectionable for economic and other reasons.
I think what we know from history is that when there's a call for a curbing of civil rights, it's only the civil rights of working and poor people that are curbed. The voices of those who are in established political leadership in this country will be loud and clear and basically far more unfettered than they have been. We see that from the levels of censorship that have been imposed on the press in the last couple of weeks. And then we have to track back the ownership of that press, and all of the mass media in this country is either directly or indirectly controlled by major corporations at this point who have their own codes of censorship with or without the events of September 11th.
Unions like UNITE have been focusing on organizing low-wage workers, immigrants, and people of color. In light of the possibility of increased backlash against immigrants' racial and ethnic profiling, how is this going to affect UNITE's ability to serve these constituencies?
You know, it wasn't like it was easy before.
Right.
It's been a complicated and difficult task, and in particular, in dealing with our majority base, white workers, we've been working very hard in UNITE for a number of years, and particularly focused in the last 3 or 4 years on explaining to Anglo-American workers, how they're tied to people of color, how they're tied to immigrants, and how they're tied to the global exploitation of workers. So I don't think we've been unmindful of this, but obviously we are swimming against an incredible tidal wave of publicity, propaganda, and public relations going the other way right now. So I've seen some very encouraging signs, though. I've been very close to our membership in the days since September 11th, and I don't see, at least among our more established veteran leaders, a knee-jerk response. Everyone is correctly appalled and horrified by what happened on September 11th, but I don't see any inclination among our leadership to relinquish their Bill of Rights just because somebody says that they should.
This is People's Tribune Radio. Our guest is Noel Beasley, Vice President for the Midwest Region of the Union of Needle Trades Industrial and Textile Employees, UNITE. You were talking about an educational process. How does UNITE go about doing that?
Well, we try to look at the forces that are in play and lay a solid political foundation for folks to base their analysis and their judgments on. For example, I think you can only understand September 11th if you look at what was happening on September 10th, and this is the way we've been talking about it with our members. And you can just tick off the factors that were in play. Our economy was in tatters based on the dot-com bubble bursting, the NAFTA policies that have hit our union and our sister unions in the Americas very, very hard, the tightening of credit on individual consumers, companies and corporations in disarray. These are things that were happening on September the 10th that were drastically affecting the livelihoods of our members, and they weren't as a result of any external terroristic force. These were all based on internal political problems and disarray in the financial community. Air transport, I can speak for a fact, was in complete disarray on September the 10th. I fly 150,000 miles a year. And, you know, all of us who do it at that level have been white-knuckled for the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, the real concern was not that some outside terrorist would turn an airplane into a torpedo, but that just the pressure on the workers in the airline industry and the decline of the equipment that they were working with and the whole roll-off from the so-called deregulation in the late 70s, the busting of PATCO in the early 80s. I mean, these are factors that escalated plainly with September 11th, but nothing that happened on September 11th was caused by these forces that were putting so much pressure on us. These were internal forces. And you could just go down a long list of things that were in place, and we try to talk about those things and talk about the fact that, you know, bombing a country in another part of the globe and devastating innocent people inside those borders will not solve these internal contradictions that are going to roll on.
As usual, the major media in the United States has spent much time discussing the economy from the standpoint of business and the need for various economic stimulus packages, while at the same time there's been almost no attention paid to the hundreds of thousands of people who've been laid off, downsized, or outright fired.
The most naked example of the policies of the Bush administration was the shaping of the original bailout of the airline industry. Now, they've been embarrassed by how naked they were in that, but all of those billions of dollars going to nothing but the pockets of the chief corporate officers and the bailing up of the presence of those industries in the stock market, and not one dime for the hundreds of thousands of directly and many more hundreds of thousands of indirectly affected people. And again, that's consistent with policies that were well in place by this administration and previous administrations before September 11th, all concern directed towards the stock market and corporate welfare, and little or no regard, if not complete contempt, for the day-to-day problems of working people.
You're listening to People's Tribune Radio. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. Our guest on this edition of PTR is Noel Beasley, Vice President for the Midwest Region of the Union of Needle Trades Industrial and Textile Employees, UNITE. Much has been made over the last couple of decades about the decline of the relevancy of unions. More often than not, analysis of this alleged decline centers on problems within the unions themselves. Noel Beasley has a little different take on this, though.
Well, I don't think it's so much of a decline as I think it's what happens when you're directly attacked and assaulted. I think that we've been retrenched But I think since the mid-1990s, we've been a number of unions have been coming out of that retrenchment. I think it was in the vested self-interest of a number of presidential administrations and political administrations over the last 25 years to do everything they could to make it as difficult, if not as impossible, as they could for trade unions to expand their base. Now, I have to say that there were forces inside the trade union movement that played to that completely. There was a lot of complacency, a lot of self-satisfaction, and a lot of attitudes inside the trade union movement that made growth as impossible internally as externally. I think a lot of that has changed. I think a lot of folks who are now in major positions of authority and responsibility in the trade union movement are urgently seeking ways to grow it and building it again inside the base that you talked about earlier of immigrant and downtrodden workers. So as we see those forces regrouping, it's more and more clear that there are two rooms inside the House of Labor. There's the ongoing group that's complacent and self-satisfied and serving itself, but there's more and more trade union leaders and activists who are in this thing to fight. And so I think the decline is based on that in part, the assault on the trade union movement, and then second, the whole economic restructuring. I mean, I think another thing that's been exposed since September 11th is this bogus idea of the service economy as something that was untouchable and could do nothing but expand. It's pretty clear that when you ripped out the core of the industrial base in this country, which started in the late 1960s and escalated in an unmitigated fashion through the early 1990s, and replaced it with these so-called service jobs, you created an extremely soft economy. And again, if you looked hard on September 10th or September 9th or September 8th, you saw all of that happening, but with the full clarity of September 12th going forward of the devastating loss of almost a million jobs within 2 weeks, that whole bubble of the service economy as the future of America burst right along with those dot-coms that had burst 8 or 9 months before.
When we're talking about a soft economy, in looking at it from your perspective, how soft an economy is it?
Well, I think we're in terrible shape. I mean, first of all, we know how the budget surplus was created. It was created by reducing or destroying essential services for the vast majority of people in the country. Thus, over the course of the 90s, we saw the decline in health care. Even though its cost skyrocketed, the quality and the availability of that care went into rapid decline. Similar declines in education, both in quality and availability, housing, elder care, child care. All of these things were done in the name of creating a budget surplus. And it's pretty clear why that budget surplus was created. It was there for a cushion for various corporations and industries as they got into difficulty. It was and was clearly there for crisis management. Again, we can be shocked and legitimately dismayed by what happened on September 11th, but the notion that we should not have anticipated that sort of thing would happen is fallacious. And the notion that those who are in control of the financial structures in this country were not prepared for it is belied by the fact that they rolled that bailout plan within 48 hours of the collapse of those towers. Now, nobody can tell me that there wasn't a bailout plan in place, and knowing where to get those dollars was based on the surplus. So it's a soft economy for the overwhelming majority of us. For the handful of people that manipulate this thing and benefit grotesquely in terms of their personal wealth, it's about as firm a foundation as you can get. There's nothing better than having all of your bets hedged. It would be as though I went into a Las Vegas casino, knew the owner, and knew that I could gamble as much as I wanted to, and at the end of the day, I would not only be given all of my losses back, but with interest.
Then there are those who don't have their bets hedged at all, the people who will suffer the consequences of President Clinton's so-called welfare reform legislation.
That's to the heart of where is the focus of government, what is the purpose of government. I think, coming out of the New Deal and well into the middle part of the 20th century, certainly my parents' generation believed that it was a legitimate purpose of government to provide a stable quality of life for the overwhelming majority of people in the country. Now, there might have been a lot of attitudes and differences of opinion about what that meant, but there was clearly a sense that government had a positive and progressive purpose. There was an incredible, propaganda attack made on that, an ideological attack, if you will, in the latter part of the 20th century. And now it's pretty clear what the purpose of the United States government is. It's to, as they say about the Chicago police, to serve and protect. And we know what they're going to serve, and we know what they're going to protect. If you look at what was being discussed a couple of years ago, the privatization of education, as though privatization has benefited anybody, the privatization of virtually everything. We're now seeing a shift. We represent a number of workers in healthcare facilities for senior citizens. And we're now seeing many of these healthcare facilities that were designed to provide stable care by trained professionals are closing down or being downsized because all the government money is being shifted to so-called home care, where what you really have is the 180-degree opposite of the sort of informal underground economy on child care in this country, where we've got more and more people basically untrained, perhaps well-intentioned, caring for senior citizens the same way they care for very young people in the country. And it's all based on individual economic deals instead of some sort of social stabilization. So it's pretty much everybody's on their own, you're right off in any direction that you want to, and we can't progress as a people this way. We're going backwards rapidly, and we're going to continue to do that unless we reorganize ourselves and reinstitute our control of the government.
This is People's Tribune Radio. Our guest is Noel Beasley, Vice President for the Midwest Region of the Union of Needle Trades Industrial and Textile Employees, Unite. You were talking about reorganizing society for the betterment of the people as a whole. How do we go about doing that reorganization?
Well, I think we do it in several ways. One is that we have to have a clear analysis of where we're at, and I think we develop that in dialogue and discussion. We have to continue to act. We cannot be pushed into the political corner and only react. We have to play from at least the center of the field at all times, and whenever possible, we have to be driving down towards our opponent's goal line. I think that was the wonderful content of the Seattle demonstrations in that period of time that rolled out. And again, we should remember that the events in Genoa, which involved tremendous police brutality against the demonstrators and the deaths of demonstrators, these all were precursors to September 11th, but were harbingers of things to come. We've got to reassert and reclaim that global mobilization. I think it was wonderful that the WTO and those forces couldn't find a place where they could meet without demonstrations and rallies. And that kind of pressure has to be kept on, and that means we have to have coalitions, broad-based coalitions, both across the country and around the world. I think those have been in formation. I think that we've obviously taken a setback since September 11th, but we've got to regroup, and we've got to reintroduce ourselves back into the political debate. There are millions and millions of people around the world who, for one reason or another, are living in such devastation and such destitution that they're going to take political action of their own. And the thing that concerns, I think, a lot of us the most right now is that anger and that frustration can be terribly misdirected and manipulated, both domestically and internationally. So we have to be very concerned about the thousands of people that we see in the streets in any country. Who's leading them? Who's directing them? And what's their agenda? And if we let this get turned into a war that seems to be about religion, if we let this get turned into a war that seems to be about anything other than trying to create a better form of society around the world, we will take some devastating backward steps.
Groups like the Taliban and Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda have been able to tap into this general unrest and the desire for people around the world to get a better economic deal.
The thing about terror is we have to understand what the roots of terror are. You can't promote somebody into a terroristic organization, which essentially is an anti-humanistic organization, without dehumanizing them. And in my estimation, those folks who are captured either at a high intellectual level, knowing what they're doing, or many others who are caught up in the emotion of it, are there because they see no other way out. They've been so boxed in and so confined and left in such desperation that they think violence against other innocent people is the only way to provide a corrective. So I think we see terror in those kinds of groups. We see the same sort of terroristic forces domestically inside the United States. Let's not forget that Oklahoma City was not an external terroristic threat. It was internal, and many of those groups still exist, and they recruit and they cultivate their members in exactly the same constituents that bin Laden recruits his forces in. So as long as a society, we favor conditions that allow that to be the majority terrain that people travel in, then we're providing the recruits for those forms of organization, no matter what they call themselves and no matter what trappings they dress themselves in. It's only if we're on a much higher road and fighting for equality and fighting for a higher standard of living for the overwhelming majority of not just our country's citizens, but everyone, that we'll be able to stomp out the roots of terrorism.
That's a tremendously laudable goal. But even here in the United States, in a supposedly democratic and open society, it seems that our two major parties are united in keeping this type of economic repression going. I mean, how do we change things here?
Well, I think there's two ways that we tried to do it domestically. One is by revitalizing and reinvigorating the trade union movement, because I think it's an established truism, and I happen to believe it, that the more educated trade union activists you have fighting in a militant fashion for the welfare of society, the stronger your overall progressive base inside of a country is going to be. For me, that's a tenet of all fundamental points of organizing. The second thing, though, is that a number of us have gone towards the Labor Party as an independent political force that's articulated a wide range of programs and policies that I think goes to the heart of this question of going at the roots of terrorism, which is fear and desperation and lack of education. And so, you know, I think a number of us are putting our efforts in that direction to build a genuinely independent political force in this country that allows us to operate within whatever political milieu is available to us, including electoral politics involving Democratic and Republican candidates, but at the same time gives us an independent platform to fight on our issues without being compromised by the unity, as you describe it, that's been developed between the Democratic and Republican parties.
In the end, fighting the war on terror and terrorism comes down to some pretty basic human principles.
There's only one successful way to fight terror and terrorists, and that's with an aggressive program to create security that's based in an end to hunger and end to homelessness and disease. If we've seen anything in the last 30 years, we've seen that the war on poverty in this country has been turned into a war on the poor. The war on poverty is the only one that I ever wanted to be a soldier in and the only one I was willing to be recruited to. And I think a lot of us are still in that war, and we ought to remember that that's the war that we want to fight in and we want to be victorious in.
Noel Beasley, Vice President for the Midwest Region of the Union of Needle Trades Industrial and Textile Employees, Unite. Thank you for being our guest on People's Tribune Radio. This is People's Tribune Radio. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. The following is an editorial from the pages of the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. The vision of a world totally different from what it is today is not just an idle dream. Revolutions in science hold the promise of a world that is totally different from what it is today. Scientists agree humanity can progress from being the informed but passive spectator of nature to becoming the choreographer of nature, but something is holding it back. For example, a revolution in biomolecular science holds the potential to conquer many genetic diseases and to defeat many cancers, but fewer and fewer people can afford the advances in medical care. What is holding science back from delivering its promises to humanity? Nothing but a very outmoded relation between classes of people in society. That relation is the rule of private property, which holds that some people have the right to accumulate wealth from the labor of others. This is the essence of the capitalist system. According to this relation, no matter how abundant the resources of a society, if you don't have the money, you cannot enjoy the benefits of those resources. From the collapse of financial markets to the starvation of millions of people who can't afford food to the wars that are being waged to expand markets and further exploit the peoples and resources of the earth, this relation between classes and its system of exchange is breaking down. It is breaking down because new methods of producing with electronics is beginning to eliminate human labor from the production process. This is resulting in layoffs and a widening gap between the rich and the poor. This moment in time can be a very dangerous one. Where there is discontent without direction and without hope, the rulers of this country will manipulate it to their own end. They're doing this today with the new laws against terrorism, which in reality are aimed at controlling the growing mass of poor who will surely take to the streets once the economic downturn takes hold. Now is the time to prepare for the kind of society that will accept from every member of that society what he or she has to contribute, a society that will give back to each and every person what he or she needs for a healthy life, physically, culturally, and spiritually. Today's world of plenty makes such a society possible. The other side is gathering its forces. We need to gather ours. That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the technologies of computerization and electronics that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide are used for the benefit of humanity as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League, People's Tribune Radio, or our other print and audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. That number once again, 1-800-691-6888. You can also use that number to contact the League Speakers Bureau and have one of dozens of revolutionary speakers come to your school campus or other event. You can also check us out on the web at www.lrna.org. The League of Revolutionaries for a New America invites the millions of revolutionaries here in the United States and around the world to stand up and join us in the quest for a world of equality and justice for all. My name is Mike Thornton. It's been my pleasure to be your host today on PTR. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.